An undergraduate, Marina Keegan, a bright, promising star of a young woman, wrote a heartfelt column for the Yale News about what it felt like to truly belong as a college student. She wrote the column in 2012, the night before graduation, and after four great years at Yale, and tragically, just a few months before she died in an automobile accident. "We don't have a word for the opposite of loneliness," she wrote. "But if we did, I could say, that's what I want in life. When I'm grateful and thankful to have found at Yale, and what I'm scared of losing when we wake up tomorrow and leave this place. It's not quite love, and it's not quite community. It's just this feeling that there are people, an abundance of people, who are in this together, who are on your team." Well, of course there is a word for the opposite of loneliness, and it's belonging. Let me tell you another college story about belonging, but this one is not from the Ivy League. It's from the University of Texas, gigantic school down in a state we sometimes don't always agree with. They have one quirky rule for admission at the University of Texas. You can get in to the U of T if you are in the top 10% of your high school, your Texas high school class, top 10%. And so that means that you can be in the top 10% of a Tony Dallas suburban school and your parents work in the oil fields, or you could be from one of the more hardscrabble schools that are along the border, along the Texas border, and everybody in there is on free and reduced lunch. Everyone above 10% gets in, which means the U of T has a diverse student body with a lot of those first-generation students. And you know what that means, right? First generation? The first generation in their family to go to college. The U of T was finding that these freshmen coming in under the 10% rule, who were from non-dominant cultural backgrounds, or they were often from the first generation, and often both, weren't doing as well. They were dropping out at higher numbers and taking longer to get through school. And remember that these were all young people who had had success already. They had graduated in the top 10% of their high school class. And yet, the ones who were from non-dominant cultural backgrounds or who were first generation were having more trouble. So, University of Texas did an intervention on their freshman class. It was actually an experiment. They had their freshmen read something called the U of T Mindset. Half of the students were in the belonging treatment group, and the other half were just kind of, they added some random stuff to their packet. All of this was done online. It's a gigantic school. They get a link to the online packet. They go through all these different things that they have to do before they get, they come onto campus. They find out what the drinking policies are. They find out how, you know, to avoid having the wrong sorts of sexual contact. And they also got this thing about belonging, where it was from someone who was supposedly a student just a few years older than they are. And they would read it, and it said, basically, "When I first came to the University of Texas, I was kind of lonely, and I didn't feel like I belonged. But after I'd been here a while, I realized that I belonged." It was just about that simple. And then the student had to read some other stuff, and then write a little reflection. Actually, what they were doing was they were told to write something to the next class coming along. So they were going to help others. So they had to reflect, if even only for a moment, about what it meant to belong as a freshman at the University of Texas. The whole thing took 25 to 45 minutes. And I can imagine them sitting in their room, filling it out, listening to music, maybe having the dog run through, and, you know, and yelling out, "Hey, could you guys be quiet?" So that was that. It was all done as part of freshman orientation. And what happened was a few months later, the researchers kind of checking up on how things were going. Wow, there was an immediate effect. They, of course, couldn't check the first week, but later on, they could check to see how often kids were going to their classes, how well they were doing in their midterms, and all of the measures for the kids that were from non-dominant backgrounds, who were first generation, who they had identified already as being at risk. All the measures were up substantially. So this was a very cheap and easy intervention. The University of Texas was ecstatic, especially about the cheap part. And so they immediately just started doing it as a regular part of their practice. Nobody really knows why it works so well. It doesn't do anything for the failure rate for middle class students. But these other students, when they flunked a test or felt awkward in class, overslept, procrastinated, all the things that young people do in college and they're not eliminated after college, you still do them, they would think, "I don't belong here. I don't belong here. The reason I'm failing is because I don't belong here." And what the scientists that design these things call it, they call it an inoculation. It's an inoculation against feeling that one doesn't belong. So I was telling my husband about this when I was working on this sermon, and then I remembered that he was one of those first generation students. "Oh yeah," I asked. "Did you feel any of that when you went to Stanford?" And he goes, "Are you kidding? Every day," he said, "every day." And he has lots of pride about how much he got out of his, you know, he did math and science at Stanford. But one thing he never had was a sense of belonging. Belonging. It's like the bowl on this chalice. It holds us together. It cradles that flame. It cradles the flame of our being. We may not even be aware of it unless we don't have it. And then we feel it every day. Belonging is a requirement of beloved community. That community of affirmation and love that Martin Luther King Jr. wrote and spoke about. Dr. Martin Luther King, he saw a community where all people share in the wealth of the earth, where poverty, hunger, and homelessness are not tolerated because human decency will not allow it, where racism and all forms of discrimination, bigotry, and prejudice are replaced by a spirit of sisterhood and brotherhood. In the beloved community, disputes between nations are resolved by peaceful means instead of military power. Love and trust triumph over fear and hatred. All that's from the King Center. So King's vision is powerful, and I contend that you can track its progress I believe that you can track its progress by how well people feel that they belong. Now, a young African-American friend of mine, my youngest son's grade school best friend, heard me talking about belonging, and he told me, "Katie, that isn't enough. It isn't just belonging. It's systematic discrimination. It's a rigged system. It's high and growing income inequality." And James was a little bit angry at me. And I was paying attention. And of course, he is bright. Even in the experiment that I described at the University of Texas, they're taking in the top 10% of the high school graduates. What about the other 90%? Those that don't make that 10% cut, if they don't have the money and they don't have the background, they're not even going to think to even try and get in. So I can make James's point for him. And the other, and even more about that, is that at the University of Texas, that simple and cheap intervention only made up half the difference between the children that were young adults that were more at risk and were from non-dominant backgrounds and the middle class students. So I can make his point as much as well as he can. But I think that I am right to, and I won't give it up, because belonging, that feeling of belonging, had such a powerful effect that just the suggestion of it, made a profound impact on real people's lives. Belonging is what makes our country a sanctuary with all its flaws and inequities. Belonging makes America a sanctuary without going anywhere. It's also a marker that tells us if we are on the right track. Are we creating a country where people feel they belong? Now, in May of 2014, I was driving to Salem and listening to the radio, transfixed by the breaking story of LGBT marriages becoming legal. And the reporter was interviewing two gay women, and they were giddy with happiness. One woman said, "I am really a citizen of this country now. I never felt like I was a real American. Now I am a real American." And then she burst into tears, and of course then I burst into tears driving down the highway. But she didn't feel like an American until she could publicly be herself and marry her partner. A feeling of belonging and legitimacy came to her when oppression was lifted. Oh, let America be America again, the land that never has been yet and yet must be, the land where everyone is free. Now, belonging has a close kin. I think of it as kind of its evil twin. It's called entitlement. And I don't pretend to know all the differences between belonging and entitlement. I do know that with belonging, there's gratitude and a sense that you are part of something larger than yourself. Belonging for the Texas students meant that they could relax and get an education. They could forgive themselves the mistakes that they made, not thinking that everything was a referendum on whether they belonged there. And all of the students at the University of Texas benefit from diversity. They benefit in the friends that they make, in the enlargement of their world. How can you be an educated person without encountering people who grew up differently than you? And when you feel entitled, there seems to be a strong fear that you are about to lose something. Entitlement comes with this great need to protect against theft. There is no gratitude for what you do have. With entitlement at its worst, you get the anti-immigrant movements that we are seeing with so much ugliness on our television and computer screens. Entitlement at its most fearsome leads to fascism, it leads to sexism, it leads to racism. And it's not very hard. Almost every day there's an example of it. I know that there's a lot of complex reasons about why the British voted to disassociate from the EU. But at some point, there was a lot of fear and a lot of sense of, I would call it a strange sense of entitlement. I believe we are seeing entitlement at its ugliest level in the Trump campaign. And I'm getting more used to it. I'm getting more used to this idea of Trump. When he first became very important, I was like, when's this going to be over? Well, I don't know. I represent Oregon Unitarian Universalist Voices for Justice, and it's a rigorous and IRS-enforced nonpartisan organization. And Barbara Smith Thomas is our treasurer, and she's very careful to make sure that we are on the right side of that line. So we are very political, we're just not partisan. But it is my prophetic right as a minister to call out ugly, evil entitlement. And I'm calling it out on the Trump campaign, and I feel it's my responsibility too. Now, several years ago, I worked on a school funding campaign. And compared to what is at stake in the presidential race, it was pretty small potatoes. Yet I knew the impact those dollars would have for the children of my district. I was a board member for the Park Grove School District. You guys know where that is. And it's a low-income district. And so for some of the students in that district, school's their shot. School's their shot. And they're not going to get a lot of other chances. They're not going to have somebody bail them out when they screw up. So I knew that those dollars would have an impact, again, on real people's lives. Consequently, I didn't think that we could lose the campaign, and it was because I so deeply felt that it was right. So, I mean, I can see some of you putting that together in your head and realize that my reasoning was highly flawed. But I was full of heart. So one time I was speaking about this at a podium, and I stepped back, and I was standing to the side, somebody else was speaking, and I kept considering in my head, oh, we just have to win this, we just have to win this, it's so important, we just have to win this. And I felt this cold feeling on my back coming up from the floor. Now, I don't know what this moment was about or what trick the world or my own head was playing on me, but I've always called that my experience of the abyss. A hole had opened up that went deep into some kind of cold certainty. The iciness was telling me that we could lose, that we can always lose. You really can't take this great and wonderful country for granted. You can't take the good for granted. You have to keep your heart open and your hands engaged and your feet ready to move into the street for action. There are no guarantees against Trump, against worse than Trump. But that is where faith comes in. Against the icy winds, We know that what we do matters. What we do may not prevail, but what we do matters. Our mission is at its heart about beloved community, Oregon Unitarian Universalist Voices for Justice. We're about both the flawed and busy multiple communities of UUs who gather in different congregations all over the state. At Oregon UU Voices for Justice, we can often find ourselves talking shop about actions and petitions and rallies, and I'll be speaking with those of you who would want to after the service, I think at around noon. But social justice is about community, that beloved community that we want for our country. It's about where we belong and who belongs with us. It's about making sure that all Americans are treated fairly and get a chance to feel that sense of belonging, and that the way into America is compassionate and just. It's about making it so very few people are saying, America never was America to me. But to be able to say, as Langston Hughes ends his poem, out of the wrath and ruin of our gangstered death, the rape and rot of graft and stealth and lies, we the people must redeem the land, the mines, the plants, the rivers, the mountains, and the endless plain. All the stretch of these great green states, and make America again. Shalom, shalom, so may it be.